Well, that's nice. VMware Workstation Media Call.
Okay, we're back to the second part. We are now recording again.
All right, so the question about price on Workstation came up, and that's why I'm an SE and I don't do pricing. But here's the quick little Google shopping results. So 117 to 168, 137 to 256. I had a customer tell me today it was $80. So I don't know where they priced that or where they found that, but
it's in the trunk of my car.
It may be
in the parking lot. Yeah.
So anyway, back to the list of products. So Workstation is a four-pay product. Fusion is a four-pay product. They both do the same thing. VMware Player is a weird beast. VMware Player will run VMs, but they won't create VMs. So if you want to make a VM, and this is great in the Linux space because you don't have to pay somebody to redistribute Linux where you do Windows, if you want to build up a Red Hat VM and build it up and install software and put Apache in it and set it up exactly the way you want, you can then turn around and hand that folder full of files to anyone you want, and they can go download VMware Player for free and run that VM. Now, they can't go back, at least not in the GUI, and make changes to the VM. They can't give it more memory. They can't take memory away. They can't add a USB controller that wasn't there before. But it's a nice, easy way to say, here you go. Here's the VM I built. You can run it. It doesn't cost you anything. Just go download VMware Player for free.
And if they have a commercial product, they could make those adjustments, couldn't they?
Yes. If they have Workstation or Fusion, they can go in and make any changes they want.
Or you can go hack the VMX file.
Well, or you can edit it by hand. but you don't need to edit it by hand because you have VMware Server. So moving down into server products. Go ahead.
So with Player, you would take this and you run it on top of your Mac OS machine or on top of
Player your... only runs on Windows and Linux.
So. Quick note also, there's torrent sites out there with like pre-built Linux images that you just download.
Well, and you don't even need torrent sites. You can actually go directly to VMware, and there's a whole pool of what we call virtual appliances. So you can download, Asterisk VoIP server and just download it as a virtual appliance. It's a virtual machine, ready built, ready to run. You just download it, plug in some information, and you're good to go. No configuring, no
actually,
time.
Half of those end up going to a site that takes you to the torrent, though.
Highly possible.
You can also download this DOS. I mean, or one of the...
Correct.
One of the DOS, you get some old...
Right.
Game or something.
So there's a lot of options there. There's actually a virtual appliance on our site called Nostalgia. That is an old DOS VM with like 8 games in it, old school games from the DOS days in it that you can go download. But, so that's the desktop-focused products. Then the server-focused products, we've got a product called VMware Server. It's been out for 3 or 4 years. It's given away free. It lets you create VMs, change any settings, do anything you want. You install it on top of Windows or Linux, and provides all the virtualization, and it's free. We just released version 2.0. I'll put that on there before I email it to anybody. We just released version 2.0, and it is installs on Windows or Linux. The big change with VMware Server from version 1. Whatever to version 2. A lot of people use version 1, myself included. Version 2, they got rid of the fat management GUI. All management is now done through the web. I don't personally like that, but some people do. But we'll talk through that in a minute when we look at it. Then we have our core product.
Backup. So what's the difference?
Between Workstation and Server. Great question. What's the difference between Workstation and Server? Workstation is going to have the latest and greatest bleeding edge features. It is, since it's a commercial product, it's focused towards the user who needs to use it all the time for their work. It's got a fat client. You fire up the GUI. You can interact with multiple windows simultaneously. It's going to have all the latest, greatest features like things like record and replay, which we can talk about in a minute when I actually go through the product. and some other features that are in there. I would say if you're trying to have multiple VMs because you need to run Windows and Linux at the same time, or you need to run multiple versions of Windows or multiple versions of Linux at the same time on your machine, you want Workstation. If, however, you've got a server, it's doing some stuff, you need to have a couple server VMs that are running Apache or something like that, then server's great. Server is designed for headless type of operations where you're doing everything remotely, you're not messing with it directly, it's not a desktop-focused product. Where Workstation is designed for, this is a VM that you're interacting with all the time, keyboard-mouse type interaction, that's the place to be.
So Workstation server and role doesn't have anything to do with how the product's built?
No. You can run any OS in Workstation that you can run in server, there's no differentiation.
You get some features in Workstation like being able to like drag files from your desktop and
you're stealing my thunder.
Do you have Workstation up here? It looked like
this is Fusion on the Mac.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, I've got Workstation on this one. Okay. We'll switch to that.
Snapshot management, which I don't have on
yes.
the server here.
Yes. Although I believe it's in server 2.
Is it?
I think. So we can get into some more of the differences as we go. Then there's virtual infrastructure, currently version 3. This is our flagship product. This is the product that brought VMware to where it is today. This is the product that's run in 100% of the Fortune 100 companies. This is the product that runs mission-critical applications every day in a virtualized way. It's not cheap. I put $3 signs next to it. We basically retail for $57.50 per two CPUs. So $5,750 per two CPUs is the suggested list price. It is not cheap, but it has some very, very advanced features, including some really advanced memory management. With Workstation and Server, if you've got a 4-gig laptop that you're running it on, or Fusion, if you've got a 4-gig laptop you're running it on, and you want to stand up 4 VMs, each with a gigabyte of RAM, you're out of luck. If you need some memory for your host OS, you need some other memory overhead, you can't stand up 4 1-gig VMs on a 4-gig laptop. With ESX, you could stand up 8 1-gig VMs on a 4-gig box. We do some pretty advanced, and we can go as deep as we want on that, but I want to get over the overview first. Memory management, ESX is where we do all the cool stuff. The killer app that really moved ESX from the test labs into production is vMotion. Most people have heard of vMotion. vMotion is our ability to move a live running VM from one physical host to another without ever disconnecting users or interrupting the work.
You did that 2 years ago with Zen.
I did that a year ago with Zen, yes. And it's in the open source Zen product. The same kind of technology is in the open source Zen product. But we're taking it even to the next level now, where today we've got what's called HA. It's a checkbox. You turn it on. And if a host would ever die, it automatically restarts all those VMs on the other host. So you get the page that says, hey, your host went down and we restarted all the workloads, instead of the page that says, we just lost these 6 servers and they're not responding anymore. DRS, which is dynamic resource scheduling, where we automatically will vMotion workloads from one host to another to make sure that each VM is getting as much resources as it can, all automatically, all hands off. Just click the checkbox.
How well does it handle databases?
So it used to be that heavily used databases were considered the don't virtualize them type of workload. That gap has closed significantly over time. Today, I mean, we tend to tell people probably about 90% of any systems that are out there can be virtualized very, very successfully, including Oracle, including SQL Server, including a lot of other stuff. You do pay a slight performance penalty for virtualization, but especially when we roll the next version of the product, 4, that should be out first half of next year, we're eliminating most of the bottlenecks that are left. So it does work very well. We have a lot of customers that run SQL Server, Oracle, Exchange, other heavyweight applications in VMs all the time. And some of the reasons are some of the other tools that I'll mention that sit on top of ESX. But so ESX is the flagship product that VMware is known for. ESX is also what we call a bare metal virtualization solution. So with Workstation, Fusion, Player, VMware Server, you install Windows, you install Linux, you install macOS on the hardware, just like you were doing it without virtualization. Then you install the VMware piece, which runs as an application, and runs each operating system inside it as an application. Works well, it's nice and compatible, easy to put on any hardware you want. But there's a performance overhead to having that general purpose operating system sitting underneath. As you would probably guess, Linux is the best platform to host VMware Workstation or Server on because it has the lowest general purpose OS overhead. But it does run on Windows too, and some people run it there just because that's what they know. ESX, on the other hand, installs directly on the hardware.
So ESX is like Xen?
It's a little bit more direct on the hardware than Xen, and I can compare the difference if you want in a minute. But it goes directly on the hardware. So the good news is you don't install an OS first, which means we get a lot better performance out of ESX than we get out of any of the hosted products that run on top of an operating system. The disadvantage, as the gentleman back here brought up, is we have a very tight hardware compatibility list. There are our own drivers. There are our own certifications that we do. The good news is just about any, you know, commercial hardware that's available from any of the big name manufacturers, Dell, HP, IBM, Fujitsu, a bunch of other ones,
Apple.
Sun. Huh?
Apple?
Not Apple. Yeah. That's a whole other story. Are certified, and we've got a hardware compatibility list that you can go download and look for your server on the list. Most popular servers made in the last 4 years or whatever are on that list. If you've got HP DL385s or Dell 2950s or whatever, they're on there. But it's not, oh, go grab a motherboard, grab a server case, install it. That's not probably going to work. You can make it work. I have two of those running in my basement right now. But you have to jump through hoops, and it's not going to be supported. So one of the reasons for having that tight hardware compatibility list is because we test the drivers and certify the drivers and certify the systems. They are rock solid. We've got customers that have had ESX hosts up for 1,300 days without reboot, without problem, running multiple workloads in production all the time. The things are just rock solid.
So how do you upgrade them without shutting them down?
Well, they haven't been upgraded.
The point you made earlier about the opposition.
This was when people were out looking at satellite or the space station.
Very interesting. Microsoft saying, "Well, we do all this with."
Right. So Microsoft's now entered the virtualization game with Hyper-V. They call it their bare metal solution, their ESX competitor. We're at least 3 to 4 years ahead of them in technology. They announced that they're going to be able to basically do vMotion 3 to 4 years from now. And they made a big brouhaha about it a couple weeks ago because, hey, we're going to have that in 3 to 4 years. So we're way ahead of them. But one of the things that they promote as an advantage of Hyper-V is Hyper-V is a server role of Server 2008, and they say, well, the problem with ESX is it's got this hardware compatibility list and you can only run it on these special set of servers, even though it's the servers that every business buys anyway, but they say that's a bad thing and that they'll run on any server, anything that Windows will run on. And to which we say, that's the problem. If you're putting all of your workloads on a virtualization layer and you're using general Windows drivers, what causes 90% of the blue screens you see? Bad drivers. Well, I loaded this mouse driver and now my whole system became unstable. Do you really want to put those general purpose drivers underneath every workload you're running? Absolutely not. It's a huge stability issue. So by keeping tight control of that hardware compatibility list, the advantage is incredibly stable. The disadvantage is you got to go to a system that's on the HCL if you want it to work and be supported. And then you can Google around, and there are plenty of sites that list a whole bunch of other servers that aren't on our hardware compatibility list that work. And they'll give you models and motherboards and all kinds of stuff
that
you can buy.
Question.
Uh-huh.
If you're spending that kind of money, why wouldn't you buy a decent server to put it on?
Good point. If you're going to drop $5,000 on a virtualization solution, you might as well spend $5,000 on the server sitting under it. Yeah.
Wait until it gets to the next line item, and then you'll know the answer to that question.
So, ESX has been around for like 6 years. I first installed it back in like maybe 2002 when it was back in the 1.5 days. So it's been around for a while. It's the flagship. It's the crown jewels. We made an announcement about 3 months ago that we are now going to give a version of ESX away for free. And that version is called ESXi. And we have a big marketing problem, and I don't want to get us deep in the weeds of the marketing problem, but I want to make a distinction clear. So ESXi, our marketing problem is we're using the name for two different things. We're using it for a deployment model, and we're using it for the free product. And it makes things really confusing to everyone. So let me try and...
That's completely different from being a product.
Yes, yes. So let me... Traditional ESX, or we'll call it ESX Classic, is basically, you have your hardware, if I can write, and then you have ESX, and then you have VM, however many you have, and then you have Service Console.
What?
Service Console. And this is Linux. So one point of confusion that's been around for a long time with ESX is a lot of people say, oh, ESX is just running on top of Linux anyway. Look, when you boot it up, you see grub, you see all the Linux boot processes. That's not the case. ESX is its own kernel doing its own thing. But we load a special VM when we boot called the Service Console. And originally, the Service Console was used for all kinds of traffic. So we leveraged that Linux console for network traffic and disk traffic, and everything else would go through that Service Console. Over time, we realized that that was some of the performance problems, and we could get a lot better performance if we moved all those drivers directly down into the ESX kernel. So over time, we have... Black marker actually works really well for having no tip. Over time, we have moved all of that into the ESX kernel, and so now all of those network accesses and all of that goes straight into ESX. So the Service Console has become nothing but a management tool today. So now, if you take a look at this, and I didn't draw this proportionally, the Service Console is about 2 gigabytes. ESX, 32 megabytes in size. We don't need the Service Console anymore. It's only there as a management tool. It gives you a command line, it gives you something to SSH into, to run commands in, but otherwise, it doesn't do us any good. It's just a management tool. So we also went back and looked at patches, updates, security vulnerabilities, all that kind of stuff. And realized that something like 85% of our patches and updates were to maintain the Service Console, not to maintain ESX. So, you know, there's a bind patch that comes out for a vulnerability, we got to patch the Service Console. Anything else as part of the open source world, we got to keep patching. And that's not a bad thing in and of itself. It's a hell of a lot more secure than other platforms. But 85% of our patches and updates are going to the Service Console. So what we did is we decided, let's get rid of the Service Console. So, ESXi is born. ESXi, you have hardware, ESX, VM, 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 no Service Console. Instead, what we do is we stand up another VM. This is going to blur things a little bit, but we stand up another VM called the remote command line interface, the RCLI. So here, if you're an enterprise and you're virtualizing hundreds or thousands of servers, every one of your ESX hosts has this Linux service console sitting in at 2 gig. And every one of them, every time you have a patch comes out, every one of those hosts has to be patched. When you move to this model, we have one RCLI at 2 gig and ESXi at 32 meg.
Is this a hard disk? Do you say that?
Yes, hard disk space. So now, whenever a security patch or update comes up for our management tools, you patch one RCLI, two if you want to be redundant. We only have to patch ESX now when we have to make a change to that 32 megabyte chunk. Much smaller, much easier to secure, much more efficient to audit and check.
Did you say in the ESX Classic that the service console, you called it, you have an instance of that in each VM instance?
No, on each ESX host, on each physical piece of hardware.
So what's the RCLI run on?
What's the RCLI run on? It's just a Linux VM that has all the commands of the service console in it, and instead of the commands being tied to the host it's on, you tell it which host you want to talk to when you give the commands.
So you just connect it to whichever host.
It can run on an ESX server, but it only has to run on one of them.
It can run on one of your ESX servers or two if you want redundancy.
And they're giving that away free.
Thousands of them.
Yes. Yes. Well, so this is the deployment model. Okay. This is the confusing part that our marketing created a problem. So this is the deployment model, and this deployment model, the 32 meg ESX with the RCLI being completely separate and optional, is the future of VMware. Everything we do moving forward is designed around this. All you need is this 32 meg hypervisor. Now, let me tell you the other piece of this. Because it's only 32 meg, we are now seeing server vendors including this with the hardware when you order it. You can go to Dell, IBM, or HP and order a box and click a checkbox on the web page that says include VMware ESXi. And it comes preloaded on either a USB flash drive or smart card or something else inside the server. And you boot the server up and it says, do you want to virtualize with ESX? And if you say yes, it boots from that flash drive. And if you say no, it switches and boots to the hard drive. So you can now order servers that are completely diskless that run ESX and then attach them directly to your shared storage to store your VMs and get them right from the manufacturer. So they're basically, some people say, they're putting it in the BIOS. Well, they're not really putting it in the BIOS, but they're bringing it down to that level, that it's integrated with the hardware when you get it.
It's more like a built-in Pixie boot than a BIOS.
Kind of, yeah. I mean, and technically, most of them are USB flash drives on a motherboard. I know that's how IBM's doing it. Dell's all over the board, as with everything. One system's got an SD card in it, another system's got a USB card in it. It's all different with Dell, but all the big manufacturers are doing this. So this is the deployment model, and this is the future. Then Microsoft started beating us up, and this is not the only reason we did this. This was being planned before Microsoft started beating us up. But Microsoft started beating us up going to customers going, why should you pay for VMware? We're going to give you Hyper-V for $28. Who cares if it doesn't have the features and it's not stable? We're going to give it to you. And, of course,
3 or 4 Microsoft years.
And, you know, so customers are coming back to us going, well, they're giving it away. Well, what they're giving away doesn't even do everything that this does, but that's not even there. To compete from a marketing perspective, and like I said, this is one of the reasons, not the only reason we did this, we announced, we're going to give away ESXi for free.
Oh,
and,
okay.
And we are. But we're giving away ESXi, the implementation type, the architecture, where it's very small, it's just a 32 meg, you install it, and you're good to go on your server. What we're not giving away is all the high-end features. So basically, this kernel and this kernel are the same. And with this, you get all the advanced memory management. You have to run on the hardware compatibility list. You can't go off willy-nilly with any piece of equipment. You get all the memory management. You get the ESX bare metal performance. But what you don't get is all the high-end features like high availability, vMotion, all that other stuff. You can enable it by adding a license key that you pay $5,750 for, same price as this. And then you enable it with the license key, and then it does everything. But because marketing just said we're giving away ESXi and didn't define the deployment method versus this is the free or ESX Lite or ESX Basic or whatever you want to call it that would have made more sense to the public.
It's shareware.
There's all these questions now about, well, what features does ESXi have? ESXi, the free version, is basically for consolidation. It allows you to take multiple servers and put them into one. It doesn't have all of the advanced management features, which is what VMware is really, really known for. That can be added to ESXi with a license key, but that license key costs.
So you can download ESXi
for free.
And use it to build VMs.
Use it to build VMs.
Except bare metal.
On bare metal.
Yep.
Except you don't get the RCLI with vMotion.
You can get the RCLI. You just don't get vMotion. You don't get high availability. You don't get dynamic scheduling. You don't get a lot of the higher-end features. But if you want to compare server and ESXi, unless you have a hardware compatibility issue, go with ESXi. They're both free, and you're going to get a lot more VMs per host with ESXi than you are server.
And you've got one less OS that you have to care
one
about.
One less OS you have to worry about, patch, manage, etc. Now, the last thing I'll say, and then I'll answer that question, is we say 32 meg. 32 meg is the kernel, the ESXi kernel with its drivers. In reality, if you download the free version and do an install, it's going to take about a gigabyte. And part of that's because we install the management tools and we install a web interface so you can log into the web interface and download the management tools and all kinds of other stuff. So it's actually bigger than that. But the kernel, the piece that's running and executing, is what's 32 meg.
Well, so the rest of it's the RCLI then.
No, it's not the RCLI. It's some other files, basically, that get downloaded. The other thing about ESXi that's interesting that this group will find interesting is when we put it on a flash drive inside a server from the manufacturer, we actually do it with two partitions. So we basically have, this is the spec we give to the server manufacturers. They have to have two 128 megabyte partitions. And so ESXi is 32 meg. The hardware vendor can put some of their own stuff on there, like Dell's going to be integrating OpenManage, HP's going to be integrating Insight Manager, or whatever that tool is. IBM's going to be integrating Director directly into these, so when it boots up, you still have all the hardware management tools. But we make them have a minimum of two 128 meg partitions, because that way, when we come out with an update, we write the update to the second partition and move the boot pointer to the second partition. Next update comes out, write to there, move the boot pointer back. So that way you're not buying something that can't be updated over time. As the products grow and mature, when we release a new version, whatever, you can go ahead and upgrade and still get to it. Sorry, question over there.
I actually had a few. Would now be fine, or should
yeah, sure.
Later? Where can we find someone like me? I'm in the market. So you kind of sold me on ESX. Actually, I was looking at ESX. Where can I find someone locally where I can get like a demo? Like maybe just go in somewhere where they have it running where I can see, do I really need the features of ESX?
Right. So you kind of need a comparison.
Right.
I think there might be some videos on our website. I'm not sure. Most of, you said you were with a school?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We've got partners here in town that I might be able to hook you up with that kind of focus on education.
I worked with one. They were EMC, I believe.
Okay. So EMC is a big storage provider, and they happen to actually also own us.
not quite unbiased.
But, yeah. Well, EMC is definitely not unbiased. We are unbiased against EMC. If you talk to an EMC guy, they will tell you that they own us. And that's what's going on. But in reality, we are a solely independent company, because we have to work with all the storage manufacturers. So we work with EMC, we work with NetApp, we work with IBM, we work with HP, we work with Equalogic, we work with all kinds of different storage. IBM, you name it, we work with it. And EMC happens to own us, but it doesn't stop us from working with all the other storage providers. But I'm thinking of like a reseller, not a big player like an EMC, but a local reseller that might be able to help you through that. Okay. So, other question though.
What do you have to say about the OpenVM format? Do you know much about that?
OVF?
I've seen something like Microsoft, VMware, IBM, HP, all
right.
Of them are kind of
what. So what is OVF? OVF, I think, is Open Virtualization Framework. The idea behind OVF is there's all these different types of virtualization technologies out there now. Not just from us, but Microsoft's got Hyper-V. They had Microsoft Virtual Server before that. You've got Xen, which is in 50 different iterations in the different Linux distributions, in the Xen Source product that's now owned by Citrix. There's lots of different virtualization technologies out there. OVF is a standard way of packaging an operating system so that it can then be used in any virtualization platform. Almost all of the virtual appliances you find on our website, whether they're made by us or by other manufacturers, are in OVF format. Workstation can export an OVF-compliant VM that can then theoretically be consumed by other virtualization technologies and used. So OVF is excellent, and OVF is kind of our attempt to standardize so that we don't run into this situation of, oh, well, that's in VMware format, so I can't use it over here.
Why don't you open source it?
OVF may be open sourced.
Specification.
Yeah, it's a spec. Yeah.
It's the XML of virtual machines.
Yeah. To define how they are, memory and all that, and then any virtualization platform can import that and go, oh, I need to give it 512 megs of RAM. However I do that, I need to give it, you know, whatever it happens to be. Here's its virtual disk. I know how to translate the format, etc.
How well do you see the other players actually going to that? Microsoft, for instance, I've never seen them actually want to do anything.
I have no idea with Microsoft on OVF. I know when I was with Novell, SUSE Linux, they were doing quite a bit of stuff around OVF, trying to standardize on it. That said, at VMworld, I ran into some of my old counterparts from Novell, and they alpha released at VMworld, and they're going to be publicly releasing it soon, a VM building tool on their website that's going to be free for anyone to use. And you go to their website and you register, and then you go in and you say, I want a Linux VM that has Bind, Apache, and DHCPD. Build it. And it builds a VM that is only those components. And then you pick that you want it for a Xen virtualization platform or you want it for VMware. And I don't think it distributes it in OVF, which you'd think it would. But you have a radio button and you pick Xen format or VMware format, and it spits it out, and then you download the package, you know, a gzipped file or whatever, with the OS built as an appliance. And they're basically taking the tack of, what I was told by them was, we don't care if we win the server war from a virtualization, we want to be the best possible way to distribute Linux in a virtual environment. Because we see that virtual environments are the way things are going. So if we can be the best guest, that's their motto around this, is to be the best guest no matter what the platform is. And so you can go up there and build a VM exactly customized to what you want and download it. And it's as small as it needs to be.
But with that thing, Ben, you say I want an 8-gigabyte virtual machine. It wouldn't be an 8-gigabyte file. Or would it be one that's expandable?
They are typically expandable files. So if you said you wanted an 8-gig hard drive, what it would do most of the time is it would just create a little, you know, 10-meg little stub and then fill it up as you install files and it would grow up to. And then, you know, if you then packaged it up and sent it to somebody and most of it was not used, obviously it would be much, much smaller to download.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever seen a problem where building a VM, like in server, it doesn't expand properly? For example, installing the TNC network product, the Small Business Edition. This came up at the Snug last month. You try to install it, and then when it tries to install the components, it can't expand the VM for some reason.
It says it runs out of disk space?
It just chokes. You don't know why.
No, I have not seen that. Because the guest OS thinks it has an 8-gig drive. Doesn't matter what the size of the file is, that's part of the virtualization layer. The guest doesn't know any better. It thinks it's got an 8-gig drive.
The only time I've ever seen problems is when you oversubscribe.
Yeah.
And you actually do run out of physical space underneath it, and then things get real interesting.
Yeah.
Do you take much of a performance hit on that? Because I know when, like, I installed VMs on my VM server here, it said, you know, do you want the fixed drive or you want
right.
this?
So that's a great question.
Click it,
is there a performance degradation for doing basically thin provisioned virtual disks?
Yeah.
Yes. In fact, today in ESX, we do not thin provision virtual disks. And that's another complaint I get about server versus ESXi. Is with ESXi, if I tell it needs an 8-gig disk, it creates an 8-gig file. I don't want that. I only need 2-gig. I just want to be able to grow to 8-gig. Today in ESX, for performance reasons, we do not thin provision. We thick provision.
Yeah, it's a fragmentation problem.
Yeah, well, it creates fragmentation problems. It creates other problems.
Can you at a later time make that storage larger without any problems? Or
not in workstation.
I was talking about
in ESX. You can grow a VM disk, and then you get your OS has to be able to handle that.
Well, right.
So in Linux, LVM could expand. In Windows, if you're using dynamic disks or some other ways, you can expand it.
That was one of my key points in going with like a VM plus SAN is that I'm getting low on storage. You know, all right, throw another few drives in the storage
and expand the one. Right.
Right.
So another thing that's really cool about ESX, now this only comes with the licensed versions where you pay the extra money, is in addition to vMotion, so moving live running virtual machines from one physical box to another, we now have storage vMotion, where you can move a live running virtual machine's disk from one storage device to another. So you go through a SAN roll and you get a new SAN, and you just, with the workloads running, move their disks from one SAN to another, shut down the old SAN, get rid of it, new SAN's up and running. I've had VMs in my little home lab on my two little cheapy home-built $300 a piece boxes with 4 gigs of RAM each. I've had VMs up for, you know, 4 months. And yet in that 4-month time period, I changed out and added hard drives and reformatted both ESX hosts. I changed out my SAN, replaced the disks. All of my SAN is a Linux server running the Enterprise iSCSI target. Replaced the disks, created a new RAID set, created new LUNs, never took the VMs down. It's very slick.
That kind of runs into another question I had. I know like with vMotion, you can move from one machine to another, or if you know this particular VM is getting overloaded, you can take some of the other loads and move it to
correct.
The other host. Can that kind of span machines to where this machine is just completely, you know, it's moved every other thing off, and it's completely just, you know, pegging this one machine, can you use some of the resources from your other? No.
And that has to do with how we virtualize, and we could talk offline about the technical behind it. But no, you're still limited to the maximum resources of a physical machine for your VMs. We treat it all as a pool, but you still are stuck on the maximum one host can do.
So if you expect something, make sure you're
right. Now, well, or what you can do is if you are using an enterprise license, which has vMotion and all of that, you set them up in a cluster, and they appear as one big resource, whether you got two servers or 10 servers. You go, oh, I'm maxing out my two servers. You buy the third server, stand it up, install it, add it to the cluster, and we'll automatically balance the workload. So when you reach that maximum point of it's moved all the VMs off, this thing still needs more horsepower, you buy the new server, plug it in, and it's immediately used. You don't have to install it and move the software and copy the files and jump through all those hoops.
I doubt where I work I'd ever run into something like that.
Well,
I was curious.
With ESX, what we find from a scaling perspective, it is very rare that we run out of CPU. It is much more likely that we run out of memory. Especially with processors today and the way they're getting faster and faster and faster, it's much more likely you're going to run out of RAM in a box than you are going to run out of CPU. The other interesting thing is because we do treat it as a cluster, unless you have a particular workload that you know is going to kill a whole box, which those workloads exist, but unless you know you have that, if you've got a choice between buying one, and maybe one's not a good example, two, you know, 4 U boxes with 4 quad cores and 256 gigs of RAM, and for the same price, you can get 4 2U single core boxes with 128 gigs of RAM or 64 gigs of RAM, go for more boxes rather than a single bigger box. Because you spread out your workload more and you get a lot more manageability and other benefits. And I see these people that buy these massive boxes because they want the biggest box they can buy, and they'd have been better off buying, you know, instead of the one big one, 3 smaller ones for less money, and they get more utilization out of it because we treat it as a pool. Unless you have a box, a VM that is going to kill
a host. I'm actually completely opposite. I have a bunch of servers that are hardly ever, you know, above 5% usage.
So,
it's like, squeeze that
that
together.
Hits the nail on the head. We do virtualization assessments for large companies as they're looking at virtualization. We have a monitoring tool that runs in and monitors Linux and Windows servers and looks at their utilization, network, disk, all that kind of stuff, memory, and then we can generate a report from that that says these physical hosts are good virtualization candidates, these are not.
Is that a pay-for service? Or?
Depends.
I was wondering if there's like a tool you could get on your website.
Well, there's a free tool that we include if you do an evaluation of ESX that'll do some of that. It just doesn't get into the detail that the real report does.
Yeah. So you might not have to run it for a long time. Being a school, loads, like
workloads are all over
here.
The place. But the average utilization across the globe that gets reported into our tool is 5%. That is average across the globe on thousands and thousands of evaluations that we've done on servers. Because we collect all that data. All that data goes into a database back at our corporate office. We don't keep any information that uniquely identifies the organization, but we keep all the statistics about, well, this box is running SQL Server, and this box is running Exchange, and this box is running Oracle, and here's the usage patterns, and the memory usage, and the disk usage, and all that. And we could put all those together into a model to get a really good estimate for somebody of, this is what we think you can get in a virtualized environment. Mm-hmm. And then let's...
Okay. You're saying that you can take a machine and move it to another machine. You have storage in... You're leaving the storage...
You have to have shared storage to do all that.
Okay. That kind of blows me out of the water.
If I were channel iSCSI.
Yeah. I do iSCSI in my lab.
I'm thinking, okay, you move the machine off of one machine to another. Now you've got that instant of that machine that you can then back up while this other machine is running.
Okay, so that's a great angle. So one of the things that we support in there is snapshots. And snapshots are the ability to basically freeze and make a copy of a virtual disk.
Support where? Which
product?
Oh, Workstation does it. Server 2, I believe, does it. And ESX does it.
ESXi,
I don't think, does snapshots.
Okay.
I'm not 100% sure on that one. I have to look. I use ESXi all the time, but I use it with our enterprise license key, so I've got all the features. So I don't know when you don't put the enterprise license key in. I'm not sure what features for sure are gone. I think snapshots are not there. Actually, we'll look in a minute when I boot up ESXi on this laptop, and we'll see. So the question about snapshots, though, we do have a tool that comes with the enterprise license called VCB, or VMware Consolidated Backup. It's not a backup program. I hate the name. It should be VMware Backup Enabler. And what it does is it will go in and work with your backup software, tell the VM to quiesce all of its disk or application data, then snap it, then present the snap to the backup program while the VM keeps running and making all of its changes, back up the snap, and then commit the snap back when the backup is done. So your backup window becomes while you take that snapshot, and then the system continues to run, make changes, do whatever, and then you back up when you feel like it, however long it takes, and then you just commit that snapshot back into the production data. So it completely automates that whole backup process, and yes, you can basically take live backups of systems. And that works over iSCSI, that works over Fibre Channel. We also support, we're in the Unix user group meeting, we also support NFS for storage, shared storage. But then you're at the mercy of whatever your NFS platform has as far as snapshotting and other things like that. But
I mean, I'm looking at right now 500 gigabytes, zooming in another E600 and 700.
Right.
And trying to make a backup of that is completely impossible.
So stand up, and I've done this just for a trial. I downloaded the OpenFiler virtual appliance. It's based on Linux, uses the enterprise iSCSI target. And the GUI didn't work for me. I had to drop to the command line to do it. But basically, stand up your iSCSI target on an LVM volume, and then use LVM snapshots.
How long ago?
Snap it all day long.
How long ago?
3-4 months.
It just came out with a new version a couple months ago.
Okay, that's good to know. Because the GUI had all the stuff in there for taking snapshots, it just didn't work.
Yeah, I messed with it myself when I started looking at storage, but there, I ran into a few things. It was like,
I don't want to have to drop to a command line to figure out, you know, exactly how to do it in their thing. I got critical systems, you know,
right
down. So.
Right. So there's a lot of cool things with that. Sorry, question over here.
I got a couple of pretty basic questions, but first, about hardware.
Mm-hmm.
There is emulation. I mean, I've done some stuff with workstation. I don't know what it is right now. But you emulate a processor, which I think, in my case, is a Pentium 3.
Mm-hmm.
But you emulate a video card.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I needed for one of my applications was we finally got to where we could get to USB 2.0. So you're emulating these various things. Is there any, quote, improvements in that? I mean, if I go to VMware 6.5,
so, yes.
Pentium 4?
Yes and no. So I'll answer both of those. So the first thing I'll give is the easy answer, which is yes, in 6.5, even over 6.0, we have revved the virtual hardware version. So there are new video drivers, there are new Ethernet card drivers, SCSI drivers, all that kind of stuff. They all get included with VMware tools when you install the guest. So yes, you do get USB 2, you get more hardware support with the newer versions of the products. Specifically to the processor we do not emulate. And this is a big, not point of contention, but question that arises. We do not actually emulate the processor, because if we emulated the processor, which we could do, lots of things do it. An example would be you can download an IBM mainframe VMS emulator for Linux and run IBM VMS. The problem is when you emulate a processor on a different type of processor, it's incredibly slow. So the reason we get the speed that we get is that we do not emulate the processor. We only manage access to the processor.
Like wine. It's not emulation.
Well, yeah.
So you drop it down and using the native...
You're using the native processor. So when a VM boots, when a guest OS boots, it sees the real processor in your system. And if you are running on a Pentium 4 box, your guest should report a Pentium 4 box.
Was that true back before 6.5?
Should be.
Mm-hmm.
It should be.
Well, now here, I've got a Windows XP machine.
Right.
And if I change the processor, I think I'm going to lose my registration or whatever.
Well, you can't change the processor without moving it to a newer machine. But yeah, product activation is a nightmare when you talk about virtualization. So that's the other piece. If you're looking at doing virtualization in your business, get volume license keys. Don't mess with OEM license keys. Because when you start talking about vMotioning and moving live workloads from one server to another, forget it. You'll be product activating left and right. You need volume license keys to do it in a business environment. If you're talking about your own personal environment, I think just changing the processor won't kick off product activation. So as long as you don't change the disk and the number of network cards and the processor all in the same time period, I think you'll be okay.
You could probably do them one at a time.
Yeah, one at a time over a period of time, and you'd be okay. Because I know it'll take one or two changes. It's just it doesn't want to see a bunch of changes because then it thinks you've moved it. But product activation, so one tool that we have, and then I actually want to do some demos, but one product that we have is called VMware Converter. It used to be called P2V, or physical to virtual, and it will take a physical machine and convert it into a virtual machine right over Ethernet, in some cases while the physical machine is running, and then bring it up in a VM. And it's a great way for testing. It's a great way for quick moves from physical to virtual. If you P2V server OS or a desktop with product activation, you're out of luck. Because once the P2V is done, it goes, oh, the hardware's changed, and you got to reactivate with Microsoft. And you can jump through the hoops, and if it's one system, it's not that big of a deal to jump through the hoops. But the other thing is those OEM keys are locked to the hardware. So if you call Microsoft and tell them that you ripped an OEM license of XP from this ThinkPad onto this MacBook, they're going to tell you, sorry, go buy a new copy of Windows, or we're sending the software police after you. Because that copy of Windows has to sit on this machine. It cannot be moved. We don't care that you paid for it. We don't care that we taxed you for it. It cannot be moved off this physical piece of hardware, or you owe us more money. So Microsoft's nasty about that. If you are taking basically a ghost image of this laptop and then loading it into a VM, running it on this laptop, then theoretically you're okay. Even though product activation may go off, you should be able to talk them through it on the phone and they go, oh, okay. But Microsoft licensing is ugly. Use Linux. It's not a problem. If you can.
I've got a question about drivers on the guest OS.
Uh-huh.
Do I have to install special drivers?
So you do install special drivers.
Okay.
But those drivers are the same no matter what physical system you have. So the same VM, once we install a product called VMware Tools, which is just a little service that sits in there, or Daemon and Linux, that sits in there and talks back to the virtualization layer and tells us what's going on and allows us to do some other things. It also installs our Ethernet driver, SCSI driver, IDE driver. Actually, we don't. Well, on workstation, we do IDE. IDE driver, video card driver, etc. Those are generic. It doesn't matter if I've got it on an Intel Ethernet card in the physical host or a Broadcom card in the physical host. It all appears as a VMware network card to the guest. So the nice thing is they're very portable. I can take the same VM I'm running on this ThinkPad, move it to this MacBook, and it runs. There's no driver changes necessary once you get it initially installed.
What happens if you don't install those drivers? Does it have like a fallback to emulate?
It will fall back to some generic NE2000 type drivers that work on, almost every guest just works if you don't even install VMware Tools. But we highly recommend that you install VMware Tools in every guest that you can, because you get better performance and better other things by having tools there. But you don't have to have it.
So could you build that VM, activate it, and then move it to another machine?
Yes. It should work. Because all you're changing at that point is the processor. It's going to see a different processor, but it's still going to see the same network card, the same MAC address, the same hard drive. All of that stuff's going to stay the same. But yeah, product activation is just ugly. If you can avoid it, avoid it. If you can't avoid it, then install right into a VM to start with to minimize your hassles. So.
Mm-hmm. So again, basic question. You mentioned about how the typical at least server is running 5% or something, but still, I've got a virtual machine. I run Windows in, so because there's some programs I got to have that don't run in Linux.
Right.
Okay, which is a common story, I guess. But I gave it 384 megs or something, so the Windows machine is pretty happy.
Right.
But if I wanted to run another copy of that in my machine, do I have to have twice as much memory? I mean, is it actually locking down the memory?
With workstation, server, VMware Fusion, yes. With ESX, no.
Okay,
that's one of the advantages of ESX.
So if I want to run multiple instances of that same machine with two different programs in the guest host, it's got a bigger memory.
Yeah, but you wouldn't need to run multiple versions of that VM. You could simply run all those programs in one VM. So let's just take a look at it. So this is...
Program don't
want to
be running.
Oh, okay. Okay, so the programs conflict. Like, one needs Java 1.5, one needs Java 1.6, one needs Mono 1, one needs Mono 2, one needs Mono 3, that kind of scenario?
It's just they won't allow two instances in the same machine.
Well, that's going to be the authorization thing, isn't it?
Well, so legally you should then buy two Windows licenses. I'll leave it at that. but the two guests would not know that the other one was there any more than they would know on the same network that the other one was there. But you should buy an additional Windows license for that.
Don't they identify each other on the same network?
I have no idea.
I think they like check in and
the application.
So this is a Windows XP VM running in Fusion on my Mac. So basically this is the kind of title bar, and let's just reboot this just so you kind of get a feel for what happens here. I'm just going to go start, shut down, restart.
While you're doing that, do any of the products offer transparent mode?
Yes. They all do now. Or, well, they don't all do. ESX doesn't, but that's a different beast. So we'll, I'll show you what that is. Again, stealing my thunder. So you'll notice when this shuts down and then reboots, it actually goes into a BIOS. We've licensed the BIOS. There's a BIOS in here. You can hit the F key to go into the BIOS, change the boot order, do anything you would do in a physical machine. Stan?
Every time you say ESX, in my mind I'm thinking ESX Classic or ESX?
Both.
Both?
They are effectively the same. They are the same kernel. It's just how they're implemented that's a little bit different. So you probably didn't even see the post. It probably went by so quick. But, I mean, it's just booting XP. XP thinks it is on physical hardware. So while this is finishing coming up and
Matt,
logging
can you,
in...
Can you boot that again? Are you saying the post test is popping up there?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
It may be going so fast. Actually, here's what we'll do. We'll do it over here on my slower laptop, where it's probably easier to see. So
it's got the little VMware logo on the black screen.
Yeah. So, okay. Before I will remind me to go back to rebooting this when I'm done. But so here I have, this is a copy of the exact same XPVM running on VMware Workstation on Ubuntu Linux. And you can run it in this traditional view where you basically run it in a window. I could have more than one VM up and each one would appear in its own tab here and I could tab between them if I had multiple operating systems running at once. I can come in, shut down, restart, all that. But the other thing that's kind of cool that you can do with this is if I go to, for example, my computer here, get the file browser up, let's unmaximize it. This is a feature that's been in the Mac product since day one, but is new to Linux, and actually to Windows for that matter. It's called Unity Mode. And in this scenario, think of something like Outlook. You do everything in Linux, but for your corporate email, you got to use Outlook. So you run a VM, you put Outlook in it, and then, well, here, let's look at full screen. I can go full screen, in which case, you know, once Windows finishes resizing, it just, hello, there we go. It just looks like a Windows machine, other than this little toolbar that's up here, and why it's not showing up clear, I don't know. This is where my menu is and things like that. There we go. Why is it not working? Anyway, so you can go full screen, and if you have dual monitors, you can put Windows on one monitor and have Linux on the other monitor and just float the mouse back and forth between the two.
This is great to flip people out of. When I go in classrooms, I keep my Windows machine full screen like that, and then if I need to drop the Linux, I use the cube, and I cube out of it, and people are like, what the hell is that?
Well, they say Windows on this one, but kind of surprises them.
So I can come out here, and let's go back to, I didn't want exclusive, did I? This is kind of hard when you can't see the screen. What I'm looking for... That's real interesting. Shouldn't be. There we go. All right. It's actually... See, okay, so a new feature in Workstation 6.5... It's not really showing off very well here, is that we're actually aware of multiple monitors, and in this case it's seeing the projector and this monitor as multiple monitors. So the VM can actually take advantage of multiple monitors now, and you could actually span a VM across multiple monitors. And the VM thinks it's a physical machine with two monitors plugged in. So anything you could do with a physical machine, you could do with the virtual machine with dual monitors. We also have, if I go into, okay, here's what we're going to do. I'm going to close this. And I'm going to get a message. Do you want to leave your VM running or not? So in this case, my GUI is screwed up, but the VM is actually running as a process in the background. So I can close this, say leave the VM running in the background, and then I can go relaunch the VM, or the console basically, and reattach to that VM exactly in the state it was in.
Windows got a screen.
Huh?
Windows got screen.
So the other things you can do is if you're running in a window like this, I can now do things like drag and drop. So I can come in here and I can go in and find a file here, and I can take this and drag it right out to my Linux desktop, and it copies the file. We also have integrated copy and paste. So I can copy and paste text inside the VM and then paste it out into a Linux app, or from a Linux app and paste it into an app running in the VM. But the other piece that's new then is this thing called Unity mode. And when I click Unity, what it does is basically integrates the Windows with my host OS. And God, this is not working well. I swear I did this at home on this machine and it worked fine, but I'm guessing this is a weird video driver problem. So I'll show you Unity on the Mac and you'll see what it looks like.
Projector is your problem.
Well, yeah, it could definitely be that. But see, you get here the little XP VM menu and you can go in and launch apps. I can open Internet Explorer. It's just going to open as a window and all of my Ubuntu window management tools are going to work. So if I've got XGL turned on, I can go zoom in Windows and doing all that kind of fun stuff. I don't know that you could move it from one side of the cube to the other because then the VM would have to be multiple desktop aware. But you know, now I can have Outlook running right alongside my Linux apps and it all appears transparently. And you can even copy and paste back and forth. And actually, I don't know if it's in the Linux version. It is in Fusion on the Mac. I can even go and say, in a Windows program, if I click on a URL, open Firefox on my Mac. So it really is tightly integrated. We have features now for shared folders and folder mirroring. So what I typically do is set up a Windows VM that maps a drive letter to my home directory on my Mac or on Linux. And then you just go to that drive letter and there's all your files from your native file system right there, easy to interact with. Also easy for Windows viruses to take advantage of, but
I'm still considering whether to do Parallels or VMware Fusion for my Mac, given whenever the new ones come out. In Parallels, you can put things in the dock that are basically Unity applications, single applications. Is it possible to do that in VMware?
Yes. So I've actually got that set up for I should be embarrassed to even admit this for my dad. He's got this Sudoku program that he really likes that's Windows only, and he can't find it for his Mac. So I have him set up with a Sudoku icon in his dock on the Mac, which is a Sudoku icon from Windows. And when you click on it, it powers up Fusion, it unsuspends the VM and gives him Unity full screen, you know, integrated Sudoku that he can play. And then when he closes it, it suspends the VM and closes down Fusion.
So it's really fast start and stop.
Exactly, because it's just suspend and resume. So for Stan, I'm going to reboot this here and show you this, and then I'm going to flip over to my Mac and reboot this machine into Windows to show you VMware Server. But
I've got a question here right along the lines of,
yeah.
I heard about something called, I think, ACE.
Yes.
Which is like application virtualization.
ThinApp is application virtualization. ACE is a whole different story, but I can tell you quickly about both of them. So while I'm talking, watch the reboot. It should take a little bit longer on here because this is a slower machine. This is a single, like, 1.4 gigahertz processor. Mm-hmm. ACE is VMware Workstation with enterprise security wrapped around it. So ACE is... there was the post. So the one side benefit of this is, you know, the newer and newer server hardware acts in the Intel space is acting more and more like its high-end Unix brethren, where it takes 20 minutes to post by the time it goes through all the HBAs and all the SCSI cards and everything else. By using virtualization, you can make your boot times go like that because they're just posting to a virtual BIOS that just runs by really, really fast and doesn't know about the real hardware that sits underneath.
It only knows what it needs to know.
Exactly. But back to the question of... what question was I answering?
ACE.
Oh. So ACE basically... no, it was resizing. Notice it automatically resized the guest to fit the window that I have. If I change the size of this window, well, if I unmaximize it, I think it's the dual monitors that are screwing me up, because I didn't have dual monitors when I tried this at home. Notice how it resizes the Windows guest automatically? Yeah. So let's shut this down. So, Ace, you take a VM that you build in Workstation, and then you wrap security policies around it. Some of those policies may be the VM virtual disk file must be encrypted. The VM will only run for 30 days from the time it is first loaded. Or the VM will only run until this date. Or the VM cannot talk to any host components. Don't care if you put a USB flash drive in. I don't care if you plug your iPod in. I don't care if you plug a keyboard in. It's not going to see any USB devices. Or allow it to do keyboards, mice, etc., but do not allow it to talk to iPods and flash drives. If they plug in a scanner, let them use that. The VM can only talk to these specific set of IP addresses. In most cases, a corporation will set up their VPN server as the only IPs that that VM can talk to. Doesn't matter what you set the firewall to inside the VM, the virtualization layer will prevent the VM from talking to anything but those IPs that you put in, or those ranges that you put in. Now, you have a contractor employee come in. You don't have to provide them a machine anymore. You have someone that's going to work from home and do data entry. You don't have to provide them with a machine anymore. You say, here's our corporate image on a CD. Oh, and we'll give you VMware Player to play it, by the way. Corporate image on a CD or DVD. You take it home. You install it on your machine. I don't care how virus-ridden your home machine is. When you launch this VM, it can't talk to your home machine. It can only talk to our corporate VPN, so you can VPN in to get your email and do your data entry. It will not communicate with your home machine any other way. So you have the ability to have a very secure deployment environment where you can hand out VMs to employees and they can put it on any system they want and you don't have to manage their home PC. They have a problem, copy the file to a new PC. Mm-hmm. They're good to go. You don't have to support them anymore. Not to mention you can have your corporate antivirus, VPNs, all that kind of stuff installed in the VM, pre-set up with your applications. And then when the user leaves, if their VM expires, great, it expires. If it doesn't expire, you get the BlackBerry-style kill on the Ace server, where if you have it set up to check into the Ace server, it'll check into the Ace server and go, oh, we just terminated this temp, and kill the VM. They can't boot it anymore. They got a 40-gig blob sitting on their hard drive that they can't do anything with. It's a very, very cool management tool for any company that does any kind of outsourcing or employees that roll quite a bit or anything like that. Application virtualization is ThinApp. And ThinApp does for applications what we do for OSs with ESX or Workstation or whatever. So ThinApp, so with ESX, we separate the operating system running in the VM from the underlying hardware. And then we can do all kinds of cool things because we've done that. With ThinApp, we separate the application from the operating system. So now you can start to do some real cool things and solve your problem about application compatibility. So basically, and I can show you ThinApp as a demo, and that's probably the best thing to do. That's why I needed connectivity, was this part. That's what it was. Sorry. So ThinApp, let me do this. How am I on time? What time are we supposed to stop?
I've got 15 minutes.
15 minutes? Okay. So let me hang on a second for ThinApp, because I want to show you ThinApp, but I want to show you a couple other things. So one, ESXi. So the first thing that people ask is, what does it look like? Whoops. Did I hit that button already and it was just taking its time? There we go. Okay. So here, I have two VMs running at the same time. So here I've got a Windows XP VM running, and I have ESXi. No, it's not running yet. I could open as many of these as I wanted. In fact, I can come out here and I've got a ThinApp VM. Let me power that up. And it's going to start booting. It's another instance of XP.
You've got ESXi, so you're running the virtualization system inside.
Yes, so this is don't try this at home. Yes, so this is don't try this at home. We do not support running ESX in a VM. You can do it. We just don't support it. It's great for people like me that need to be able to show demos, and I don't want to carry server-class hardware that's on the hardware compatibility list around with me to show you, so I can run it in a VM and it works just fine.
So VMware is on the hardware compatibility list.
Our own products? No, we're not. We're not on our own hardware compatibility list because we don't support it this way.
It's an unlisted item.
And it's... it's a performance nightmare. Yeah. You would never want to run a VM inside ESX in a VM. It'd just be ludicrous. You wouldn't want to do it. But you can do it, and for demos and stuff like that, it works very well. And so what I want to do is show you what ESXi looks like. I was actually thinking about doing an install, but that would take a couple more minutes. But when I power this VM on, it's going to post. Pause this virtual machine. Okay, so there. The problem we were talking about overcommitting your disk and then running out of space, I'm down to 1.4 gigabytes of free space and it's saying, I'm not going to run. So let me go delete something. Yes, yes, yes. It wants me to delete something immediately. Yes. Hold on a second here. This is what I get for using my machine during the day. If I close the other virtual machine, it'll free up some space because we do create a swap file for the amount of memory allocated to the virtual machine. But I know I have some junk on here that I don't need, and I'm going to go blow something like that away. This is a bigger problem I have to deal with. Like, here we go, an old copy of Virtual Center, or two old copies of Virtual Center. Let's blow those away.
Got an easy question while you do that. Is there any good VMware training around the area?
Any good VMware training? So we have a couple different options for training. There, 2.88 gigabytes available. Let's see if that works now. Much happier now. So there's the post, and now it's booting ESXi. Training. So there are some web-based classes you can get, but there is also a certification track. So we have the VMware Certified Professional, and that will come around. You go to our website and search, and it will hit St. Louis. I just had a couple of customers that took it like 3 weeks ago down off of Manchester. So I don't know when it's coming back through St. Louis, but they roll it around, and it's a four-day training class. So this is what ESXi looks like. And when we get to the console, you can't do anything other than set the root password and set the IP address. That's it. Everything else has to be done through the management tools. So there it is. It's up. It's running. Notice it sees that I have an Intel Core 2 Duo CPU. You know, it's seeing the physical CPU in my box. If I ran it, I can't even run it over here. In order to run ESX in a VM, you got to be on a 64-bit box with VT enabled. And anyway, so I can go to this website and start downloading the management tools. But I wanted to show you what the management tools looked like. So back over here in this VM, I have the management tool, which is VMware Infrastructure Client. Now, this is also a demo of ThinApp, because the VMware Infrastructure Client is not installed on this machine. I created a ThinApp of the VMware Infrastructure Client. It is a single executable that I can run on any machine. In fact, those of you with Windows machines in the room, I have it on my USB stick. I'm happy to walk up to any of your machines, plug it in, and run it right on your machine without doing an install. This requires .NET. This requires a bunch of other junk in order to work. And it all works from a single executable that I can take anywhere and run through ThinApp, which is our application virtualization.
There's no Linux version, right?
There is not a Linux version, no, although you can run some of the things through Wine and Google is your friend. Okay, hold on. 192.168.36.1.
The infrastructure client.
Under Wine.
Oh, that's not what I want. I want. Hold on. I gotta. What did it say my IP address was? What did it say my IP address was? 131.
There it is.
Yeah, that's what it was before. Okay, let me put in my. No, wait, that's the wrong password. About VMware. So this is going to load up the VI client. If while that's loading, if we come over here and look in the console, one, you'll notice VMware Tools is not installed. Please install VMware Tools. So going back to your question earlier, yes, you can run without VMware Tools. And we don't make VMware Tools for ESX because it's not something we support. So this is running without VMware Tools loaded. If I click in here, F2 to customize, enter my username, enter my password, configure root password, configure lockdown mode, and we won't go into that, configure management network, restart management network, test management network, configure keyboard, view support information, view logs, restart, reset. That's it. That is the whole interface for ESXi at the console. Everything else is done through the web management, or in this case, well, while we're waiting for that to come up, where'd my mouse go? Oh, I know where it is.
You don't have a mouse inside ESXi.
No, no mouse.
That's why they call it the CLI.
So let me. Hello, there we go.
He's just got curses.
Yeah. So what was it? 192.168.87.131. If I pull it up in a browser. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Anybody else want to kill the person at Firefox that did this?
Yes.
I mean, we were making headway against IE, and we're going to start losing because of this. But anyway. So here you can download the infrastructure client. You can download Virtual Center. We include that on here if you want to take a trial. Or we can come down here and browse the data stores or SDK. I thought there was another way to get in here. Download the remote command line. Or let's go back over here. Here's the virtual infrastructure client. It's actually still loading. It's based on Mono. I'm sorry. So here we can see a summary. Okay, so it's a single box. It thinks it has, there's a CPU usage. It thinks it has a gig of RAM. I can look at virtual machines that are on it. I don't know why I don't see my tree over here, but I can do file, new, virtual machine. I can go through and create a VM.
This is the free set of tools?
Yeah, this is all ESXi free. I'm not using anything that's paid for here. Let's give it 420 megs of RAM.
Except for Windows.
Well, yeah, except for Windows. Hard drive size, finish, creates the VM. And then my question was going to be, can I take a snapshot here? Yes, there's the snapshot manager. So you are here. And I don't see take snapshot. Let's see, can I click it here?
It's got to be running.
No, you don't have to have it running. So there I just created a test snapshot. So now if I go back to my snapshot manager, here's my state now, here's my test snapshot. So yes, snapshots are in ESXi free. So I've got lots of other stuff up here. I could log into the server console, but I want to be conscious of time. Server console looks very similar to this console that we had here, where you can go in, but you can get in and see the list of VMs and see their consoles through the web console. And then I'm also happy to show any other ESXi stuff because it's very, very, or sorry, ThinApp stuff because it's very, very cool what you can do with ThinApp. Like, you know, so here's Acrobat Reader. I've got the whole Office suite on here. Notice it shows up here as if it's installed. I can launch Excel.
Oh, Microsoft.
But well, I have OpenOffice too. But if I explore out here and look in the C drive, program files, there's no Microsoft Office folder. Office is not here. It's not on this machine.
So is it a VM with like a single app inside of it?
Kind of, but not really. It's application virtualization. So it's similar to what we do with an OS, but we're doing it at the application layer. And we ask me when we get done with everybody because I want to stop on time-wise. Here's my home directory from my host. Here's ThinApps on the host. Here, you want to see OpenOffice? Here's OpenOffice. Oh, I downloaded this pre-ThinApp for free. I think it's Google for ThinApp OpenOffice. You can download it for free. How do you create a ThinApp? With the ThinApp authoring tool, which I have in a VM and I can show you, but I want to stop.
Is there a freebie?
It's not a freebie, no. There's a significant price tag on it. But if you're in a company, it makes managing your applications so much easier that it pays for itself in management time very, very quickly.
But it's only for Windows.
Only for Windows, yes.
But somebody can write those and give them away free, though?
No. I think we made a special thing for some of these open source packages to give out as demos. And so that's why people were able to get away with that normally. The person who does the packaging has to pay the license to ThinApp stuff. And so I'm sure we made a special deal with them to give away some open source apps like Firefox you can get for free. You can get OpenOffice. You can get some other stuff that you can download for free and try. All right, but I'm like way at my time almost. I did have some freebies to give away. So you guys can tell me which order you want to do things in. So this is just some extras I picked up from VMworld. We got some VMworld mugs. We do have a VMworld bag.
Ooh.
It's a laptop bag.
A little bit of padding.
A little bit of padding in there. Actually, the padding's not too bad. And then I figured I'd give away two copies of Workstation or Fusion. So two copies that... basically, one person per, and you have to pick either Workstation or Fusion, not one of both. And then we'll get your email information, and I'll get marketing to send you a free key. And then you're good to go. So I had some forms, but Stan actually said, let's run from the registration list of who signed in. So do you guys want to do the little stuff first?
Yeah.
Or the Workstation and Fusion first?
Little stuff first.
And is anybody disqualified if they get picked for the first one to get the second one? I mean, Workstation or Fusion, yes.
How about we pick a number and they get their choice?
That's fine.
Of the little things.
The
whole
pick
choice.
Okay, that's
choice. Yeah. Pick a number and that person that gets called, they get their choice of what they want.
So Matt, you need to pick a number between 1 and...
21.
21.
1 and 21.
13. It's me! I won!
No, it's... Eric Cruz.
That's me.
Would you like a mug, a bag, or a copy of Workstation or Fusion?
I guess it'll be Workstation.
Okay. So I'll get your information in a minute.
Now you need to pick a number between
1
and
21
that isn't
13.
21.
Who was the last person to sign in?
No, Phil Bunch.
You ran the list.
I'll go with the laptop
bag. Okay. You can go for Workstation. Yeah, there's another copy of Workstation.
Two copies of Workstation?
Well, two products is what I was told I could give away. So it can either be Workstation or Fusion. So he took a Workstation, so you're welcome to a Workstation.
Okay.
All right. So I'll get your email information afterwards.
Two.
Chad Hershey.
I'll pass. I'll give it up to somebody else.
Okay.
Pick a number from 1 to 10.
8.
Dan.
Matt. I'll take the laptop.
Okay.
Hey.
Come on up. With a nice VMworld 2008 logo.
Cool. Corpse.
Give us a number between 1 and 21.
5.
Gary Sheldon, the last one to sign in. Where'd he go?
First one to leave.
Out of luck.
Let's go 7.
7. Okay. Carl Fitch.
Let's get some. I'm the president. I get this stuff all the time. Let's pick another number.
Pick a number.
Okay, I'll pick 1.
Barry Morrison.
All right.
Pick a number.
11. That's me. my favorite number is 13.
Boy, we're out. I don't have anything else.
Okay, in that case, I'll pass and
okay.
Move on to 13.
Who was 13? Was already called.
I think I already did 13.
You can keep it.
Well, shoot, I'll keep it.
Can't give it away.
So, feel free to come up and ask me anything else. There's so much we could talk about.
Great presentation.
Matt, the one question we have to ask is, will you, unofficially, of course, might possibly be found at a certain watering hole like, oh, say, Ozzy's later this evening?
I might wander over there.
Oh, okay. Well, in that case,
can you continue to ask me questions?